This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees at 7:35. Thousands of supporters of natural gas development marched to the steps of the state capitol in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, yesterday to show support for that state's booming Marcellus shale industry. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports.
Energy equals jobs.
In just a few years, Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale has rapidly become one of the most productive natural gas formations in the world. Estimates of up to 3,000 people from all over the state hopped on buses and turned out for the day-long event hosted by the state's main gas industry trade group, the Marcellus Shale Coalition. Bob Beck works for a company called New Pig Energy, which builds large liners to help contain spills. He lives outside State College and came to the Capitol to show his support for what he feels is a misunderstood business.
I think there's a lot of people that really don't understand the industry, that they feel that there's a lot of contamination that goes on due to the industry. I don't think they really realize everything that the industry does to prevent that from happening.
Others at the rally felt the same way.
You know, everyone should be concerned about the environment, and the oil and gas industry definitely has those concerns in mind.
Wendy Driscoll works in business development for a Pittsburgh-based construction company that builds and maintains roads and gas well pads.
I work in the industry, and, you know, I'm thankful to be a part of it. I've only been in 3 years, and it's given me the opportunity to make a very good living.
The rally began at Metro Bank Park on Harrisburg's City Island, where supporters put on red, white, and blue t-shirts with the slogan, Pennsylvania Jobs, Pennsylvania Energy.
Shale forever!
That's Ed Valentis, a land manager for Huntley & Huntley, a gas exploration company based outside Pittsburgh.
This is, to Pittsburgh anyway, the steel industry on steroids. We need this.
About 30,000 people in Pennsylvania work directly in oil and gas jobs. And Valentis points out there are many other spillover effects.
CDL drivers, laborers, welders, instrument people, electricians, but inside the companies, HR, accounting, it's pervasive. It trickles down.
However, it's difficult to quantify the overall jobs impact. Industry boosters often cite a figure closer to 200,000 by counting workers in related industries. However, that number has been called questionable by independent economists. Environmental groups have also raised serious questions about shale gas development. A small group of anti-fracking protesters came out to participate in a counter-rally.
EA trails are not for shale!
Arlene Taylor was among them. She's a retired state worker who opposes gas drilling. She's concerned about its effects on air and water quality. She held up a sign saying, "You can't drink money."
They're doing it. It'd be wonderful if we could do this safely and have clean natural gas, but that right now, that's not what it is.
Several other environmental groups hired an airplane to fly around the Capitol with the message that shale gas is a dirty form of energy. Marcellus Shale Coalition President Dave Spiegelmeyer says that's precisely why his group held the rally.
You know, our opponents are passionate. They're not many, but they're passionate. We want to show we have equal amount of passion in broad segments of the communities across the Commonwealth, that people stand up and fight to continue to produce the Pennsylvania energy.
With the gubernatorial primary just 2 weeks away, Spiegelmeyer says the message to Harrisburg is simple. This industry has broad support.
If we have a competitive playing field in Pennsylvania to invest capital, let's celebrate that and grow jobs in Pennsylvania so we can have people that are investing back in Pennsylvania and tax revenues, raising their families here, keep their kids here to work and grow their families as well.
Although Governor Corbett does not have a Republican challenger in the primary, all of his Democratic opponents favor some kind of tax on gas extraction. A few Republican lawmakers have also stated support for such a levy. Right now, gas companies pay what's known as an impact fee for each well they drill. Over the past 3 years, the fees have brought in about $630 million. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration between public radio stations WITF in Harrisburg and WHYY in Philadelphia on a multimedia, data-driven reporting project covering the Commonwealth's energy economy. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:40. Thank you. Partly sunny skies today with some scattered rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s. Lows tonight in the 50s. Sunshine on Thursday with temperatures in the 70s and 80s. A chance of rain and thunderstorms returns to our forecast on Friday. It's peak season for morel mushrooms throughout Appalachia. One online site, West Virginia Wild Pickers Facebook page, is getting a lot of traffic of people sharing stories and photos from their adventures foraging. Glennis Board spoke with the page's creator and has this report.
It's part of my heritage. It's part of my culture, I believe.
That's John Beverly, lifetime Harrison County resident and wildcrafter, meaning he harvests a variety of fruits, veggies, and herbs from their natural environment.
My father, when he was young, would go out and gather greens and berries and nuts and ginseng, and we got a ranch, morels, a few mushrooms. Yeah, I mean, this is something I've always, been around. See, like every time I eat morels or eat ramps, it brings up memories of being with my father or my family or, doing things with them. So, it's nice. It's a nice memory. And like I said, it's a very flavorful food. I mean, like ranch, it's not for everybody, but, it seems like around here, people's acquired that taste and they really enjoy it.
Beverly says about 2 or 3 years ago, he started the West Virginia Wild Pickers Facebook page, really just because he was curious about wildcrafting. Then late last spring, it gained quite a bit of popularity around this time, morel season. People love to share what they find, Beverly says, especially in the spring, after winter melts away and folks finally get to go out and enjoy the outdoors.
Actually, I've had morels yesterday myself, but...
Beverly says it's currently the peak of the morel season. While black morels have pretty much already come and gone, the blonde morels should be in full swing.
Most morels, I either dehydrate them and then I put them away for later in the season. That way I can reconstitute them, use them later. Or if I use them now, I clean them, rinse them real well. I usually cut them in half. I put them in salt water for a couple hours, just soaking some bugs or anything out of them. Then I re-rinse them, and then I just either slice them up smaller, put them on pizza, or I saute them in butter, a little salt, a little bit of garlic, use them as a side dish, with a little meat or something.
Beverly says it's also ramp season. He says spring greens like ramps and dandelions are popular. Next, chanterelle mushroom season comes on, followed by a variety of berries, then other fruits, and he says the gathering season usually ends in the fall with nuts. Hickory, walnuts, hazelnuts and butternuts are among those that are favorites. He's learned quite a bit from the people who contribute to West Virginia Wild Pickers Facebook page, everything from how mushrooms grow, best harvesting practices, and discovering new things to harvest, like wild olives. But one of the bigger discoveries for Beverly has been how much interest there is in wildcrafting throughout Appalachia and even throughout the world. Beverly says he's seen interest from as many as 18 other countries.
It's really surprising. The interest was as big as it was. I never thought that, that culture existed as well as it does today. I mean, it just, people still enjoy these things. It's, and there's people out there that want to learn. I mean, there's lots of young people that never experienced this growing up, and they've gotten into it, wanted to learn and ask questions.
Beverly says he enjoys the contributions and conversations between all walks, from college professors and botanists and experienced wildcrafters to those like him who just want to learn more and share what they find. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glennis Board in Morgantown.
While many folks go out in the woods to forage for ramps or mushrooms this time of year, others are looking for spring wildflowers. These often tiny creatures can easily blend into the landscape and be hard to see. But as Allegheny Front's Jennifer Svetajordan reports, with a good interpreter like Shane Miller of Raccoon Creek State Park at the helm, the world of southwestern Pennsylvania's wildflowers is wide open.
The reason I stopped here is there's a little plant that grows here that I kind of think of as the Rodney Dangerfield of plants. There's just some plants that just do not get respect, and this is one of them. Now you look at it, it has these tiny, tiny little white flowers, nothing too exciting, but in pioneer times, this was a very important plant. Let's say you were misfortunate enough to get lice. This is the plant you'd use to treat it. Also, let's say you wanted to make a little bag of potpourri. Put some leaves in it to prevent the critters from chewing on your winter clothes. This is the plant that you'd use. This one is commonly called cat's toes or mouse's toes because it kind of looks like they're fuzzy little toes. Let me show you one other interesting thing. Let's say it doesn't have the flowers on it. If you turn its leaf over, it's metallic silver. Look at that. Isn't that cool?
I already seen more than I normally see on a hike.
Head into the creek.
The reason I stopped here is so I can let you folks know we need to form a single file line to head down this next trail. It is a narrow trail that winds down into the valley here, and then it opens up down at the bottom. We have five different species of trilliums that are here. We have the snow trilliums, which bloom when there's snow out. We also have toad shade that we'll bump into. We also have the wake robin, which is around when the robins are around. He's named Remember. We also have the big white one, which is the large flowering trillium. And we have also what's called the declining trillium, which is a beautiful but unusual trillium that bows down to the ground where you don't see it, and it has a completely white center. So it doesn't have a purple center like the ones these folks are enjoying. Yes, that is a trillium.
It looks like a four-leaf clover with a white flower and like a little pine cone in the middle, like a robin egg.
You can take a look at a plant that's called toad shade. Years ago, pioneers and settlers actually believed that stinky little red trillium over there, and in the springtime, it will have leaves that are green and purple, toads hid under. Well, for the past 10 years, I've been looking and have not found any toads hiding under them, but it's kind of a fun story to remember its name, toad shade.
Poison ivy. I'm
allergic, but I get it all the time.
That's gross.
The purple flower that I was pointing out that was on the right-hand side of the trail is one that I bet most of you have in your garden but don't even realize it. That plant is called dwarf delphinium or dwarf larkspur. It's called dwarf because it's a small one. But if you look closely at it, we're going to walk by more of them. There's two different names for it, the delphinium and the larkspur. Well, delphinium actually refers to the shape of the dolphin. So if you look closely at this, towards the back of it, there's this little spike that comes out that's supposed to look like a dolphin. I think it takes a little bit of imagination, but I can kind of see where it comes from. The other one, which is larkspur, where does that come from? Well, years ago, they used to call it lark's foot. And a lark is a springtime bird that you'd see. Now imagine its foot, but purple, and attached to these flowers. Interesting names. I don't often get to talk about dolphins in the middle of Pennsylvania, but we have a flower that supposedly looks like one.
That was interpreter Shane Miller at Raccoon Creek State Park Wildflower Reserve.
And that's Jennifer Sveta-Jordan. The Allegheny Front is produced in Pittsburgh and reports on Pennsylvania's environment. You can find out more at AlleghenyFront.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback at wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.